Invite you to turn now in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 10. We'll start in verse 14 this morning. It's found on page 246 in the Bibles that are in your seats. We continue on and get the last words of the glorious, highest point of glory for the kingdom of Israel, which occurs under Solomon. I'll give you a moment to find that there. So 1 Kings chapter 10, we begin in verse 14. The weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents, not including the revenues from merchants and traders from all the Arabian kings and the governors of the land. King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 bekahs of gold went into each shield. He also made 300 small shields of hammered gold with 3 minas of gold in each shield. The king put them in the palace of the forest of Lebanon. Then the king made a great throne inlaid with ivory and overlaid with fine gold. The throne had 6 steps, and its back had a rounded top. On both sides of the seat were armrests with a lion standing beside each of them. 12 lions stood on the 6 steps, one at either end of each step. Nothing like it had ever been made for any other kingdom. All King Solomon's goblets were gold, and all the household articles in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Nothing was made of silver, because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. The king had a fleet of trading ships at sea, along with the ships of Hiram. Once every 3 years it returned, carrying gold, silver, and ivory, and apes and baboons. King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Year after year, everyone who came brought a gift, articles of silver and gold, robes, weapons and spices, and horses and mules. Solomon accumulated chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses, which he kept in the chariot cities and also with him in Jerusalem. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones, and cedar as plentiful as sycamore fig trees in the foothills. Solomon's horses were imported from Egypt and from Kew. The royal merchants purchased them from Kew. They imported a chariot from Egypt for 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. They also exported them to all the kings of the Hittites and of the Aramaeans. Here ends our reading. There's a response of thankfulness that you have printed for you in your bulletins. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks indeed. Let's pray. I once went to a Carolina Hurricanes game with somebody who had a lot of prominence. And because he had a lot of prominence, he'd done well in his profession. We traveled there in a nice car. We met at Jones Sausage Road there at the Bojangles. I hopped in his car and we went on up to the Canes game, and we get there on Edwards Mills Road. And the line is just, all the way out onto the Wade Avenue expressway there. And but he goes in this other lane that's open, and he shoots down there and then takes the left-hand turn, which is, it's police directed. And so we just shoot on in. And there's this long line going a long way, but there's this early exit there. After you go under the Wade Avenue expressway, early entrance into the parking lot, and the person conducting the traffic with this long line going down this side, he sees us, and he sees this special parking pass in the front window, and he goes like that, and we just zipped right in the parking lot, and we parked about 20 yards from the door of the, at that time, the ESA, or the, I was at PNC Arena. Now, and then we just zip right in there, and we'll go down and we sit about nine rows up at center ice. And that was fun. And it was fun as he's a prominent person, and hockey has, if you don't know, it's got 20-minute period, three 20-minute periods, and between each period is a 20-minute recess. So you essentially have two long half times. You have a 20-minute period, then the teams go in their locker room, and you got 20 minutes, then you got 20 more minutes of action, then you got a 20-minute rest time, and then the third period. And so during these 20 minutes, he'd say, "Hey, you want anything?" And I was like, "Oh, no, you know, stadium food. It's like, you know, popcorn at the movies. It's like, what is that, $9? And so I'm a cheapskate, so I was like, "Oh, no." You know, but he just said, "Oh, you want this? You like these?" I said, "Yeah," but I, he said, "Oh, no." And he just orders it, you know, and gets it for me. And it's just like, wow, this is awesome. You know, just everything is just under his control here in the world with the money that he had there. Fortunately, he was good in his use with his money. That is, he's good to me. So I enjoyed, I enjoyed that very much. What we see here in this passage is that God gave his king, his choice for king, the chosen son of David, Solomon, prominence over everything that you could think of, over the world, over the kingdoms of the world, over the stuff of the world, over baboons, right? Isn't that funny? That strike you funny when you read that there? So we're to read this and say, wow, this is incredible. And to understand that to live in Solomon's kingdom was like to live in no other kingdom that's ever been. No king ever wiser. You've heard before, if you've been here, you know, the name Solomon is a version of Shalom, which means peace, and aptly given to Solomon because the kingdom was under peace during his reign. So they weren't at war during Solomon's 40 years as king. As they had been and oppressed under Saul at war. Warring just goes on and on with the Philistines. But then under David, they're still under war. It's just now they're winning the battles. But under Solomon, there aren't battles. It's just the nation is at peace. And all the foreign kings recognize the greatness of Solomon and recognize the foolishness of facing him in battle. And so it's fight or join, and they join. They come and they bless Solomon, and they give him stuff, and it just increases his wealth in the kingdom and how good it was for God's people under Solomon. Now we know Solomon was the first son of David who was king. After that, you have a grandson of David and a great-grandson of David all the way down. But that Jesus is the great son of David. And in fact, Jesus declares himself to be one greater than Solomon, who is here, which Bob read for us from Luke chapter 11. So we look at this passage and say, well, how does this relate to us? If things were thus and so for God's people under Solomon, and Solomon reigned from 970 to 930, BC, for those 40 years, how are things for us? What benefits does Solomon provide for his people, and where are the touch points for us? Where are the like things for us as those who are under one who is a greater king than Solomon was? And so if you like to fill up blanks in an outline, here we go. Number one there, recognize this. And this is a huge point here in this text. No king was greater than Solomon. No one. Not during his day, not before, not after. And so point number one, no one greater has ever lived on earth than Jesus. So be amazed at him. Be amazed at Jesus. Really, really. Don't think Jesus, ho-hum. Don't think, Jesus, well, I have to be embarrassed about that. Jesus is the greatest king, the greatest person who's ever lived, the most admirable person to walk in the dirt of this earth and be amazed at this. Be amazed at this. So we see this, you see it listed in verses 14 through 29, the whole passage, every verse is giving us some aspect of Solomon that was wonderful, that was great. So look down there, open your Bibles if they're not open. We're going to walk through these verses so you can see this. So you know, you don't follow, as Rocky would say, a bum. You don't follow a bum or someone with embarrassing things you don't want to be discovered. You follow someone who the more is discovered about him, the more he's admired. So Solomon and Jesus. Verses 14 and 15. Revenues or tribute from kings, governors, and merchants are brought to Solomon. How do we see this? Well, when Jesus is born, guess what? Kings from the east come and they lay their tributes at Jesus' feet, don't they? What we call the wise men come from the east, probably from Babylon, the Magi, they come and they bear gifts. Okay, these kings giving to Solomon here are foreshadowing of these gifts that Jesus gives. But during our day, that's what we do, right? When we give our offering, we bear gifts to our king. And we come during our time of offering like these wise men from the east, and we give our tribute to Jesus. And this is occurring by people all over the world. All races and nations are coming together on Sundays and giving tribute to the great Son of David, just like these kings from all over the world were giving tribute to the Son of David, Solomon. But then when Jesus comes back, same thing, right? Revelation 5, and then in heaven now, but in the new heavens and new earth, Revelation 21 and 22, people from every tribe, tongue, and nation are there giving tribute to the great king enthroned now on earth in the new heavens and the new earth in Jerusalem, in that new Jerusalem that's come down from heaven and are giving him tribute around his throne. People from all nations. So when you read this passage and you read these kings and governors and people from every nation are coming and they're giving tribute to Solomon, this is a foreshadowing. God makes this happen in the life of Solomon to show what would happen in the life of Jesus from his birth to today as he's up in heaven being worshipped by people from every tribe, tongue, and nation and worshipped here on earth. And then when he returns and he's worshipped by kings, governors, merchants, etc. From all over. Verses 16 and 17, look there. Gold shields. This is just putting people's noses in it, isn't it? Gold shields. If you fight me, you fight soldiers who are carrying gold shields. Not iron, not steel, not copper, not bronze. This is a king and a kingdom so great that even his soldiers in the dirt and the blood and sweat and swords and such are fighting with gold shields. Today with Jesus, we're told in Revelation 7:3 that before one of these images of the chaos that's happening in the world today, which is largely the book of Revelation, is an accounting of the chaos that's happening in the world today, and that Jesus is yet sovereign and sitting on his heavenly throne while chaos happens, while men do their evil things. But before this chaos is released on the world in our era that we're experiencing now, this angel's told at the beginning of Revelation 3, wait, don't release it all until I've sealed my saints with my spirit and put my mark on their forehead. And we realize we are a protected people. As Christians today, we're a protected people. We have soldiers with shields of gold, so to speak, around us. As the writer of Hebrews says, you know, angels are servants who are ministering to us and protecting us. We don't see them, but we live under God's protection as Christian people. Other people don't. Non-Christians don't live under the protection of God. There's common grace, yes, but not like us. And we know we're protected in everything in every minute. even when we lose our lives, and this is the point of the book of Revelation, they were losing their lives for their faith. Even when they lose their lives, they're under God's protection because God protects us through death. And he doesn't protect other people through death. His shields protect us and keep death away from us. Revelation 20 calls it our death the first resurrection, when our souls rise and are with Jesus. And so nothing can harm us. As Jesus said, people can kill our bodies, but they can't kill our souls. So we don't have to fear people who can kill our bodies. We're just completely protected by this great king, not with gold shields, but with angels and the seal of God's Spirit upon us. Verse 17. Notice here, Solomon has a second palace. He's got a palace there in Jerusalem, but he's also got a palace elsewhere in the kingdom. This is true both. Jesus has his palace here on the earth. We're the temple of the Holy Spirit, right? And we know that the temple and the palace, that's a word in the Old Testament that's doubled. So when the temple is spoken of, it's the same word that's used of kings' palaces. Okay. But yet Jesus is enthroned on high. And so he's got these two places where he has these palaces. Up in heaven, where he's living in his palace, so to speak, with those souls of those who have believed in him. But also he dwells with us by his Spirit today. He's a king with two palaces. Verses 18 through 20. We read about Solomon's throne and how it was greater than anyone else's throne then. No one else had a throne like this. And we see that Jesus has a greater throne than any king has ever had on the earth, because Jesus' throne today is in heaven. It's a throne where he is uncontested. He's not up for election again. He's not worried about his death when he won't reign anymore. But he has an everlasting throne in heaven. And when he comes back, that throne will just be brought down here to the earth, where he will continue to reign in his everlasting throne. His throne is greater than any earthly king's. Keep that in mind during election seasons. Okay? Really, the throne we bow down before is the throne on which our king sits, Jesus. And no person, no matter how much you like his politics, will make your life good like Jesus will, or will fulfill his promise like Jesus will to you. Verse 21, the goblets and the household articles are all gold. We read, Bob read for us, Revelation 21:21. Even the streets in the New Jerusalem are gold. The streets are the thing. We're stepping on it. Okay, a great king. 22, Solomon has a fleet of trading ships bringing back riches and exotic animals. This is what we see in the new heavens and new earth. Riches beyond compare, and John probably is struggling to describe this. And I didn't make Bob read the section we were skipping around in verses with all the different gemstones. I don't know what those are. And I can't pronounce them either. But it's just all these things and gates made of a single pearl, no seam in it. Streets of gold and all this, just abundant wealth and food and trees that are producing fruit every month, all the time. This is the case in Solomon's kingdom. Everything is just so plentiful. He's trading. He has everything he needs, bringing in anything he needs, exporting stuff. And it's just a time of abundance, not of scarcity. And that's the new heavens and the new earth for you and I. A time for abundance, where we have everything we need and more, and it doesn't ruin us because our sin natures are taken away. Right? That's the good news too. Verse 23, look there. Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. That's perhaps the center verse of all this chapter. Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. And of course, Jesus is greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. Paul says in Colossians 2 that all wisdom is in Christ. He knows everything. He understands everything. And all wisdom is in him. Verse 24, the whole world saw audience with him, not the other way around. The whole world sought audience with him. Solomon was the authority. And Jesus is the only authority. And his people from all nations want his presence and to be in his presence. And we seek his authority. We seek his wisdom. And this is what's going on today. You have churches all over the world, and we're quote-unquote seeking audience with Jesus. We're coming to him to hear him, to hear him speak to us, to declare his wisdom to us. And we look at this and on Sundays and through the week, and we say, what should we do? How should I view this? How should I view my job? How should I view my marriage? How should I view my kids? How should I view my parents? How should I view money? How should I view what can I do when I need something? How I can pray? What are things I can pray for? We're seeking audience with this great king, and people are doing this from all over the world. Jesus is not limited to a particular culture. You know, the Mormons had a problem when they expanded internationally because they had in their doctrine that you had to wear blue pants and a white short sleeve shirt when you did your two-year, you know, mission and talked to people. And then they went into cultures like Thailand, and it was like, you know, that was like wearing a Star Trek outfit, you know, which are cool, by the way. But we lived next to some Mormons in Bloomington, Indiana. We asked them about this. They met on their two-year mission, and they had been in Thailand, and you know, but it was culturally, they had a culturally bound religion. You ride a bicycle, and you wear navy blue pants and a white short sleeve shirt. And so they've had to adjust their religion for that, and that's been kind of a clunky thing. But Jesus is not culturally bound. People from all cultures, from all nations are coming to him, seeking audience and seeking his wisdom. Verse 24, just as Solomon's wisdom was not his, but God's. Remember 1 Kings chapter 3, God asks Solomon, what do you want? And he doesn't ask for riches. He asks for wisdom and understanding so that he can govern the people. And this is what our King Jesus has, wisdom and understanding. And he governs us, his people, with this now and when we're in heaven and when we're in the new heavens and new earth. He governs by understanding. He understands everything, and so he can tell us exactly how to behave, how to do things. Verse 25, foreigners bring to him gifts every year. We've talked about this. People from every tribe, tongue, and nation, Revelation 5, bring honor to him and gifts to him. Verse 26, Solomon had stockpiles of horses and chariots. This was a marker of military strength. When you look in the Old Testament and you see something about chariots, that's how nations marked how strong militarily a country was. How many chariots they had. So if you you know the story of Barak and Deborah, the invaders coming on have, I think, 900 iron chariots, and they keep mentioning that. It meant their army was really, really strong because a chariot could just run you over. It was like tanks going through Poland, right? You know, the Poles went out there on horses. You know, the Nazis came in with tanks and low-flying airplanes, Blitzkrieg, right? And that was the, you know, that's the equivalent of chariots of Old Testament times. And but this tells us that Solomon had no lack of military strength. If you were in Solomon's kingdom, you didn't have to worry about attack. He just had all kinds of horses, all kinds of chariots. He even had fancy chariots. You know, he's beyond. He just, you know, had all the chariots he needed, so he got fancy chariots too for show. And so if you were in Solomon's kingdom, you were at peace and you didn't have to worry about things. You didn't have to worry about attack or your house being burnt down by foreigners. And this is, so that was the good thing about Solomon's day. But for us today in the church, as we mentioned, Hebrews talks about how the angels are protecting us. Hebrews 1:14. The writer says this, are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who inherit salvation? And so we're protected. We have our chariots, so to speak. God has his army. You know the expression, the Lord of hosts, or the God of hosts. The hosts are angels. That's what that's talking about. And you have these occasional glimpses in the Old Testament of the hosts, or the angels, who become visible to a prophet or to somebody. And they see that God is protecting them with angels. And that's the case for us today. Angels exist and they're protecting us. We just can't see them. God uses them as agents over us. And so military strength, Jesus has it. When Jesus comes, Matthew 25, when the king comes with all his in all his glory, with all his angels with him. What Jesus says at the front of Matthew 25, when he comes again, it's final battle and he's coming with his angels. Or when we see Revelation 19, final battle there. Jesus is coming with his angels, but his angels now are protecting us so that we're not harmed. Verse 27 tells us there that cedar and silver were common. These are expensive woods. And they're common. There's just so much. We're told in this passage that silver like had no value. It was like gravel. Because there was so much gold, there was so much wealth, it was like, silver, I don't need it. And this is the case for us in terms of spiritual riches that we have today as believers. Resources that we have by the Spirit of God and by what Jesus is doing in us, who he's making us to be. These are riches beyond what our neighbors have. And then, of course, in the new heavens and new earth, this is physically and spiritually true. Abundant riches. Verse 28, again, exquisite horses that he's gotten from Egypt when we're in the new heavens and new earth. All the wealth and the resources of the world will be ours because we'll be over the world. There'll be no competing nation. We'll be, you know, literally one nation under God, one nation under Jesus, where people from all backgrounds will be with Jesus as their king. Verse 29, money was no object in purchasing anything Solomon wanted. We're told in Revelation 21, when Jesus comes back, Bob read it for us, that there'll be no hunger and no pain. Verse 29, Solomon was able to export goods to the kings of the north, those in Aram and up above. The whole world was connected up with Solomon's supply chain. And so this is a picture we have of Solomon, where God's people had everything they needed, and they had total prominence over the world, at least in their area of the world, and no danger of harm, no need for fear. And this is what we have in Jesus, our King. As Jesus says in Luke 11:31, one greater than Solomon is here. Jesus is never outdone by any Old Testament prefiguring of him. He always fulfills and is greater than what has come before him, including even Solomon. So that's the picture for us that's given. We have a great and amazing king. Now we can also see this. We can look back, and here's your next line and your outline there. We can also look back in time to see this in Jesus' life on earth. Listen to all, and the key words are amazed here, and these are just a few. But look at all of the ways Jesus has prominence over the earth and people and things during his incarnation, when he's here for those 30-whatever years. Luke 2:42, as a boy, everyone who heard him when he's there for the Passover with his parents, everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. Jesus has prominence over the Old Testament, prominence over the Word. He understood the Old Testament better than the rabbis, better than the Pharisees, better than the Sadducees, as a teenager. Prominence. People were amazed at his understanding and his answers. Matthew 7:28, when Jesus finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. So Jesus has prominence over teaching, over the arranging of ideas so that they made sense, the challenge of teaching, arranging ideas so that they make sense and so that they're clear. He has prominence over that. Matthew 8:27, the men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? These are the disciples after Jesus wakes up in the boat when there's the big storm and the water's coming in the boat. And they're like, Jesus, wake up, we're going to drown. And Jesus says, huh, what? And he stands up, and here's what his disciples say. What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. So Jesus is prominent over the created earth. Even the winds and the waves. You know, you can have prominence over clay, over dirt, over a tree that you prune. But prominence over the wind? Prominence over the waves? Right? Prominence over a riptide? No, but Jesus has that. And so his disciples stand in amazement over him. He has prominence, dominance, kingly dominance. It's the one who is king over creation. He reveals that to them there. Matthew 9:33. And when the demon was driven out, the man who had been made mute spoke. The crowd was amazed and said, nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. So Jesus has prominence over demons and their effect on human beings. You know, that's not something I can do. Make a demon leave somebody, make someone who's never spoken before be able to speak. But Jesus has that prominence. And so those around are amazed at him. Matthew 13:54, Jesus came to his hometown. He began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. They said this, where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? So Jesus is amazing for his wisdom, how he understands things, for his miraculous powers, the things that he's doing. Matthew 15:31, the people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. Dominance, 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 dominance. Whatever kind of ailment someone had, Jesus had dominance over it. Buddha didn't have this. Muhammad didn't have this. Ancestors don't have this. Tony Robbins doesn't have this. Okay, although he can make you fall in love with someone who's hugely obese. Right? Shallow Hal. See that movie. It's wonderful. Okay. Dominance over everything. Mark 1:27. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching and with authority? He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him. Dominance over evil spirits. And then the last one, Matthew 5:20. When he had cast out the legion of demons from the demoniac in Gennesaret off the southwest side of the Sea of Galilee, and he cast them into the pigs, all the people were amazed. We have a king, like Solomon shows us here in this passage in 1 Kings 10, who's dominant over everything that comes his way. Dominant over it. And in his incarnation, he was just giving us a preview of what he would do in total in the new heavens and the new earth without his intervening. In his incarnation, he's intervening into a chaotic world and showing prominence over little things here and there. But in the new heavens and new earth, Revelation 21, verses 1 through 5, no sickness, no blindness, no deafness, no muteness. Everything is as it is supposed to be, where he will be prominent and dominant over everything. So be amazed. You don't have a king that you have to be ashamed over, and never stop being amazed at Jesus.